Well, welcome to CSL, Center for Spiritual Living, Olympia. Delighted that you're here on this magnificent Sunday morning. The sun is out. We've had clouds and all that smoke for such a long period of time. In any case, at the moment, I have the pleasure of introducing the song, and then we'll move into 2 minutes of silence. And after that, I'll do the opening prayer. Allow yourself to continue to feel that power and that presence within you. Let me say the opening benediction in the first person. Accept what you're able to for yourself, and know that you are blessed as we go through this. So I know that that power, that presence, that Almighty Spirit that I call God is within me, is as me, and I am part of that. And I know as I reach down into my soul, as I open myself up to that power and that presence, I experience the joy. I experience that love of creation. I experience that connection with each and every person in my family, in this room, in this community. And as I allow myself to feel that power and that presence, I radiate it outward. To greet, to love, to honor each and every one of them. And I know that as I lay my claim to this honoring of each and every one, that it is so, because that is the law, and we operate within that law. And so I release my word into the universe, knowing that each person that I meet is honored, is respected, is joyfully greeted. And together we say, and so it is.
Good morning. I see a lot of new faces here. So I'm Reverend David Robinson. I'm the senior minister here, have been for just over a year now, and very happy to be here from the Northwest originally, but I did time in hotter, drier, southerly places. And so I'm happy to be up where it's 70s on Labor Day weekend instead of 115, as in Redding, California. So, and welcome to you all for being here today. This whole year, we've been celebrating the 100th anniversary of this teaching, of the Science of Mind teaching. It was in 1918 that Ernest Holmes started first kind of really teaching this philosophy out of his house. And eventually he was speaking to packed theaters in the Los Angeles area, the Wilshire Abel Theater and other such places. But he started in his own living room around a fire, in the fireplace, and teaching these thoughts. And so this month I wanted to look at some of the, what I call other voices. So no spiritual leader, no artist, no one of us creates in a vacuum, right? So we are influenced. We have streams of influence that come into us. So this month I wanted to take a look at a few of the streams of influence, of the people who influenced Ernest. And not as an academic exercise in let me talk to you very dryly about this person, but their philosophy and how it relates to us today. Because their teachings, their philosophies were timeless. That's why these principles are timeless. They've been stated since the beginning of time. They're still fresh today because they are meaningful today. And so to take a look at the meaningfulness of it. And coincidentally this month, we're also going to have some other voices speaking here because I'm out of town for a couple weekends this month. And so 2 weeks from now, we'll have Reverend Carrie. There she is. Who has been here for a while, but is going to make her debut talk from the pulpit in 2 weeks. And then the last week of the month, I'll be down in Eugene for the Northwest New Thought Rally. And so my longtime friend and teacher, Reverend Liz Moranti, who a few of you know, will be here speaking also. And so we're going to be looking at today, and next week I'm going to be looking at Emma Curtis Hopkins, who was a powerful teacher in the late 1880s up through the early 1900s. Ernest Holmes was actually her last pupil, but she taught the people who founded Unity. She taught the people who founded Divine Science. She was kind of the go-to. If you were kind of out on the fringes of religion in the late 1800s, she was the person, you know, it's like you got guided, go see Emma in Chicago. You know, you need to go hang with her, and she'll straighten you out when you're having these visions and you have no idea what to do with them or what does it all mean, and it doesn't correspond with the Calvinistic thinking of the churches of that time. So so we're going to take a look at Emma, and then 2 weeks from now Carrie gets to talk about one of her absolute favorites, Ralph Waldo Emerson, who was one of the co-founders of the Transcendentalist movement in the mid-1800s. I'll be back the next week to talk about Thomas Troward, who was a British judge and one of Ernest's favorite and most powerful influences. And then the last weekend, when Reverend Liz Moranti is here, she's going to talk about Florence Scovel Shinn, who was a writer, wrote a book in 1925 called The Game of Life and How to Play It, which is a very powerful book and wonderful book, and she's going to be doing that with our youth. So we're going to look today at the first part of Emma. Emma teaches her lessons in 12s, in 12, sets of 12, and she always says the first lesson is to name and claim your good. Name your good. You know, we talked last month about the process of prayer known as spiritual mind treatment, and we said, have a purpose for it. What is it that I want? And so if we don't name our good, we're kind of wandering aimlessly, right? So we want to name our good. So she says the very first lesson, the first of the lessons is the word God. Take a breath for some of those of you who don't resonate with that word. And she said there's a power in our words. There's a power in the word. But she says the word God isn't the sufficient name because lots of people have used it and haven't necessarily had breakthroughs. So it's the place to start, but it's not necessarily the place to get to the real heart of what we want, of what we're really here for. She says there's a name within each of us. I like to call this our personal name of that. There's a name within each of us, and when we find it, and each of us must find it, nobody can tell you what the name is. It's your name. It's your resonance. It's your vibration of that infinite. And we have to find it and hear it for ourselves. But she says the word that'll get us closer to that is that if we're really honest about what we're really seeking, what we're really going after, it's our good. And she says good with a capital G, as the song said. That was a great community song for this because that's based on this chapter, that whole song. My good with a capital G. Everything moves or waits for its good. If you reach your hand up to scratch, you're doing that for your good, right? Because the itch doesn't feel good, so you want to have it feel good. The bird flies across the sky looking for its good. The plant sends down roots and grows up into the sun looking for its good. Looking for its good. So that's what we're here. That's the purpose of, that's the life flow of all of us is we're looking for our good. And we're doing what we need to do, whether it's moving or whether it's being still. For our good, to experience and bring our good in. She says, if I could take the unspoken sentence which lies like a hidden jewel under the jagged covering of your thoughts about the things you do not like, I would read it. There is good for me, and I ought to have it. Say that with me. There is good for me, and I ought to have it. And so that's the thought that sits underneath us. If we're missing something in our lives, it's like we know there's a good for us and we want to have it. If we're feeling out of love, right? Not well loved in whatever that looks like. We know there's a love for us and we want to have it. Yes? Yeah. If we look at our checkbook and we're feeling a little bit, cut off, we're saying, no, there's a flow for me. There's a prosperity for me. There's an abundance of the nature of the universe for me and I ought to have it. Right? If my body is not responding, there's a health for me, there's a life and vitality for me, and I ought to have it. And so that's the first thing she says is tell this truth, and the truth will set you free. When we understand that's what we're really going for, that's what we're really about. So the first name, she says, the first name of God is good, and the first name of good is God. And she says, my good is my free life. My good is my free health. My good is my strength. My good is my support. My good is my defense and protection. My good is my love. All these are outpicturings of the good. This is what we're really going for. She goes on to say, have a clear idea of what is your good, capital G, good. It will come and settle upon you. Be definite when you give the statement of good, which is the statement of being. Expect to see it work quickly. Truth is not slow. Truth is quick. Truth, with truth, all is now. All is now. And so as we allow ourselves to let that sink in, we also recognize that Emma teaches on multiple levels, just like any good spiritual teacher. And so she speaks to the people who are in front of her and to their concerns of their day. But the principle, I always notice that she uses the word capital G. Whenever a New Thought writer uses the capital, they're talking about a principle. They're talking about what we might call a God quality. They're not talking about my specific good, okay? So she always spells it with this good. It's that principle. So it's not just about princes, palaces, and parking spaces. Okay? It's not about just getting the stuff. It is getting the stuff, but it's not about just that. There's something more going on. And so she addresses those immediate concerns, but has this deeper message, which is sort of the same message that Jesus said when he said, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these other things will be added unto you. Okay? Go first for what is that capital G good? What is that God, and I don't necessarily mean the word God, the big guy in the sky kind of description, but that infinite goodness, that infinite wholeness, that infinite whatever it is, presence, energy that is within and all around us. Seek first that, and everything else is added. There's a pair of ideas that are called that I want to work with and explore for a moment, and they're called transaction and transformation. Transaction is improving our human condition, making our lives better. Anybody good for that? Yeah, okay. We want to make our lives better. And these teachings can be used to do that very effectively, very successfully. And that's transaction. And we get to play in that. But transformation, which is the other concept, awakens us to realize that we are not just operating in the human condition, that there is more. That there is something else. We awaken from the dream. For those of you who are familiar with the movie The Matrix, we realize that we are not in the Matrix. You know, we are more than that. We can play in the Matrix, but we are more than that. We're not in what the Hindus call the Maya or the illusion. We're more than that. This is Jesus's, I'm in the world, but not of the world. Okay? We do play in duality. See, this is real, right? You know, in Zen teaching, when the student comes to the point of going, it's all illusion. It's all illusion. The Zen master goes, yes, and then whacks the student over the head with a stick or tosses him down into a mud puddle or tweaks his ear or his nose. And sort of like, yeah, illusion that. You know, and so there is this going on. The duality is happening and there's more. And when we recognize that we can play in the more, and we are coming from the more, and not just wrestling with the duality, we free ourselves, and we start to experience transformation. Now, here's the catch. Many of us say we want to transform, right? Yeah? Or be transformed. But we oftentimes don't want to pay the price. Most of us don't do any growth until we get uncomfortable. Yes? Take a breath. I'm the same way. We all do this. It'd be so nice when we just hear the little whisper of spirit, but usually it takes the 2x4 or, you know, the carrot and the stick to move us along. Okay? Again, Jesus had the great example with the young man who came to him and said, what must I do to follow you? And the first thing he does is he gives him the transaction answer. Follow all the rules. You know, love your father and your mother, obey this, you know, do obey the rules, follow the rules. And the young man says, I do all that. It's like, I've mastered the transaction, the duality, and working in that. I've mastered that. I'm doing that already. And Jesus gets excited. He goes, this is great. He says, you're ready for the next lesson. Take everything you have and sell it and give the money to the poor and follow me. Because what he knows is he has to be pulled out of the belief in the duality. And of course, the young man says, bye. Not going to go there. And we're so many of us are like that. How many of you know that there's something you know you need to do to shift your consciousness, shift your reality, but it's so comfortable to not do it? Right? And so it's challenging. Because what we recognize is what Carl Jung said was that every transformation demands as its precondition the ending of a world, the collapse of an old philosophy of life. And we don't want to go through that death and that collapse of our philosophy, our way of life. Yes? Or it's scary to do so. See, the caterpillar seeks his good, right? Until one day he finds himself spinning a cocoon. And what happens next? He dissolves, right? This is the death of the caterpillar. So it's something else can be born, something that was already there within him. So he can become something completely different. See, your transformed self is already within you. Breathe. Our transformed self is already within us. But we have to be willing to let the stuff that's not the transformed self die and dissolve in order for that to come forward. It's when a person has finally looked at the legacy of devastation that they've left in their life and say, I need to get into a 12-step program. My habitual comfortable way of drinking, drugging, whatever it is, I finally get it. It really doesn't work, and it's so in my face that it has to die. That aspect of me has to die. I knew a couple that when he got sober, his wife said, I don't like being around you anymore. You were much more fun as a drunk. And so the marriage died. Now, they both, by the way, went on and had happier marriages, down the road. And that's the thing about transformation is it lifts us up to a level that we can't believe we could be at before. It's if we're willing to go through, if we're willing to pay the price of going through that, we get to someplace that we've never been before that's far more wonderful. But we need to have the disillusion. Jewish Rabbi Rami Shapiro, said that we come into this world to align our souls with God. The relationship between God and soul is analogous to that between the sun and its rays. We are the extension of God in time and space. So we are the rays of this light, of this sun, of this life. We are that. How then can we be misaligned with God? Misalignment is a state of mind that arises when we forget our true relationship with God and act as if God were other. We forget who we are, we forget who other people are, and so we act out of that forgetting. That creates the misalignment. And most of us got started on that. Actually, most of us got started on that in the womb, to be honest. Most of us were raised with ideas that we're separate from them, those over there. We're better, they're better, whatever it is. We got raised with all that stuff. We're not good enough. All that stuff. Because it sounds so wonderful and easy to say, I want to align myself with God. Doesn't that sound good? And we all don't want to do that. It's really true. But we have to let go of our misalignment, which came about by believing in false gods. Believing in the false god of separation, believing in the false god of fear, believing in the false god of not being enough or not having enough or not, you know, being good enough to be loved. That somehow or other we could be separate from all that. And so, but we've developed these wonderful systems that support us. It's why people stay in abusive relationships. It's, yeah, I could have a better relationship with this. I know how to work in this. It feels comfortable and it matches somewhere in my consciousness what I believe and what I believe I deserve. And I'm not willing to really look at and get through all that. It's why we stay where we are. I know how to work this. Sure, I don't have enough money at the end of the month. Sure, my body is doing whatever it's doing. Sure, my life is looking like this. Sure, I'm still stuck in the same dead-end job. Whatever it is. But I know how to work that. And it feels comfortable because I've been like this for my whole life. This is the way I am. And the truth is, you're not that way. Even though it seems very real. And so in order to go through that, we have to go through that. We can't skirt around our belief in abandonment. We can't skirt around our belief that we're not good enough. We can't skirt around that. We have to face the monster, basically. Yes? We have to look it straight in the eye and say, I'm going through you. I'm going through you. You have beat me up and run my life long enough. I'm going through you. And that's when we start to wake up and start to move into transformation. But for most of us, it's scary and it's uncomfortable. So we'd rather spend our time rearranging the deck chairs than getting off the Titanic, right? Or waking up and realizing we were never on the Titanic in the first place. So we have this mindset. We must have this mindset. We need to have a mindset, which Rumi describes in one of my absolute favorite Rumi poems. He says, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. See, that's the space of transformation. That's where I'm not into what's right, what's wrong. That's the duality world. And I step past that. I step out of that into this other field. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Because we're in another world. We're in what's been called the new heaven and the new earth, that vision. Because suddenly it's all transformed. It's different. Even though it's all the same, it's different. We're seeing with new eyes. We're seeing fresh. We're seeing it in a different way. So the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. We're in direct perception of consciousness. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. And so that's the invitation with transformation, is to wake up and not go back to sleep. So when Emma speaks of good, it's an invitation to something deeper. It includes all these things. It includes all these things. It doesn't mean you have to go live in a cave and chant Om for the rest of your life. You may want to take a break, you know, from life and go do that while you let some things settle. But it doesn't mean you have to do that. That's not the rest of your life. The rest of your life is to be a transformed individual engaged in the world. Yes? To be there's a wonderful book a number of years ago called The Everyday Mystic. It's for us to be everyday mystics. It's to be walking and talking in the streets and in our jobs and in our homes as mystics, as people who have seen this and are living from this consciousness. So the good that Emma talks about, this capital G good, is already present. It's always present. It's right here. It's right now. It's not something that's out there that we have to bring over here. We don't have to manufacture it. Our good is right here, right now. Take a breath and breathe that in. See if you can feel that in your body. It's just something that we align with. It's not absent. It's not missing. We just forgot about it. This is like the story of the prodigal son who goes off and forgets how wonderful he is and how supported he is. And finally it says he comes to himself after he has all these adventures. You know, he lives high, he lives low, crashes and burns, and finally wakes up and says, you know, I remember who I am. At my father's house, you know, people live a heck of a lot better than I'm living right now. I'm slopping pigs and living, you know, basically homeless. And when he wakes up, what happens is the Father, the universe, comes rushing out to meet him with something new and restores him. So when we recognize that our good is already present, when we recognize that we are that good already, it rushes out to greet us. We step into it. We become transformed. And all we have to do, and I'm going to steal one of Carrie's probably lines here, all we are doing really is, to quote Emerson, getting our bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. One of my favorite Emerson quotes. Getting our bloated nothingness, which is our beliefs and all our stuff, that I'm separate and I'm not good enough and all that stuff, I know you don't have any of that, but you know people, right? Okay. And so when we get that stuff out of our way, then the good that's already present shows up because we're not blocking it anymore. It's always been here. It's always been here. But that may take facing our deepest, darkest fears. But as we face those fears, we have to remember that the light within us is brighter and more powerful than any fear we'll encounter. Because the truth is that you and I are that light. The truth is that you and I are already whole, perfect, and complete right now. All we're doing is remembering that truth and allowing it to express through us, being open vessels for it. This light is always calling us to our good. So this week, there's one spiritual practice, just one. For those of you who are new, I sometimes give three. When you came in, hopefully, you were given this Emma Curtis Hopkins statement of good. And if you don't have one of those, if you would put your hand up and whoever's got those can bring you one. Everybody have one? Good. No? Raise your hand, please. Mark? Or Mark has them, okay. All right. What I'd like us to do is read this together. And our spiritual practice this week is at least a couple times a day to read this for yourself. Are you willing to play with that? Okay. So let's read this together. The good I am seeking... Together. The good I am seeking is my God. My God is my life. The good I am seeking is my health. God is my health. The good I am seeking is my strength. God is my strength. The good I am seeking is my support. God is my support. The good I am seeking is my defense. God is my defense. Life is God. Truth is God. Love is God. Substance is God. God is intelligence, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. God is life, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. God is truth, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. God is love, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. God is spirit, omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient. And so Emma suggests that the speaking out continuously of what we have felt and thought intuitively, which is this is what we know, truth in intuition, is the first movement toward demonstration, toward manifestation, and toward satisfaction. And I've occasionally had people ask me about those three words, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient. Omni simply means all or everywhere. So it's everywhere present, omnipresent. All-powerful, omnipotent, and omniscient is all-knowing. It's that divine intelligence that is everywhere present. So we are living in a presence that is everywhere present, is pure power of life, greater than anything that we have ever thought was in our way. And it is omniscient. It is the all-knowing divine intelligence that knows exactly how to express itself. So that's all we're tapping into with that. We're tapping into that aspect of ourselves. So would you play with that this week and take that on to read that at least, I would say, when you wake up and before you go to bed? Yeah. I'm going to close with a quote. It's a bit of an extensive quote. It's from Ken Wilber. It talks about religion. And he says, religion itself has always performed two very important but very different functions. One, it acts as a way of creating meaning for the separate self. It offers myths and stories and tales and narratives and rituals that, taken together, help the separate self make sense of and endure the slings and the arrows of outrageous fortune. This function of religion does not usually or necessarily change the level of consciousness in a person. It does not deliver radical transformation, nor does it deliver a shattering liberation from the separate self altogether. Rather, it consoles the self, fortifies the self, defends the self, promotes the self. As long as the separate self believes the myths, performs the rituals, mouths the prayers, or embraces the dogma, then the self, it is fervently believed, will be saved, either now in the glory of being God's saved or goddess favored, or in the afterlife that ensures eternal wonderment. And for many people, this is fine. This is what they want. This is what we want. We all go through a stage where we want that, right? We want our separate self consoled. We do. We start there. He says, but religion has also served, for usually a very, very small minority, the function of radical transformation and liberation. This is the difference between transaction and transformation. This function of religion does not fortify the separate self, but utterly shatters it. Not consolation, but devastation. Not entrenchment, but emptiness. Not complacency, but explosion. Not comfort, but revolution. In short, not a conventional bolstering of the consciousness, but a radical transmutation and transformation at the deepest seat of consciousness itself. It blows up our idea of who we thought we were to reveal something new. It's not that we stay in that place of devastation and emptiness, but we have to walk through that process to become the butterfly. Richard Rohr says, this second function is the ultimate goal of all mature spirituality. This is the contemplative dimension of religion. As Thomas Keating says, the primary purpose of religion is to help us move beyond the separate self-sense to union with God. Breathe. Jesus said, do not suppose that I came to bring peace on earth. I have come not to bring peace, but a sword. Not to bring peace, but to bring division, to bring blowing up my old ideas so I can step into something new. And so I invite us to be willing to say, yes, I am willing to go through that dark night of the soul, which can be this long, or it can be for a long time, whatever it is. And by the way, each of you has gone through transformation to get here. Most people who show up in this kind of a church have at some point in time said, my old belief system doesn't work for me. That old way I was doesn't work for me. And most of us have had experiences in our lives where old relationships don't work. I am moving on. Old jobs don't work. I am moving to I'm doing something better. So most of us have done transformation to some degree. And so it's just the invitation to continue that journey of allowing yourselves to be more and more and more aligned with spirit, and not run by old darkness, old beliefs, and old systems that really don't work. Let's pray. So I know that there is this presence, whatever name we give it. And whether we call it God, whether we call it good, whether we call it the Buddha mind, whether we call it the Tao, whether we call it Allah, whether we call it Adonai, whatever name we give it, it is beyond all the names. It is greater than that. And it is this life energy, this love, this good that lives, moves, and breathes as us. And so because it's infinite, because it's everywhere present, each of us is, must be, can only be one of that. And so we are the life, we are the love, we are the light. We are the good right now. This is our truth, whether we remember it or forget it, whether we're out of alignment with it or not. This is the core truth of who each person in this room, each person who hears this is, each person on this planet is. This is our truth right here, right now. And so I simply speak my word that each of us awakens to whatever degree we can, to a greater experience, to a greater expression of this truth. We have the courage to go through and release what no longer serves us, to say, you know what? I've had enough of that. I choose to go higher. I choose to go for a greater alignment with the light, with the love, with the wholeness of who I truly am. And then allow that to show up in form in my life. Each of us says yes to this divine. Yes to this true nature. Yes to this capital G good. And so in great gratitude for the blessings that come out of all that, because we bless not only our own lives, but the lives of everything and everyone around us, because there's only one of us. There's only one mind, and we are all connected. So as we grow, all of us grow. And so in gratitude for that growth, in gratitude for that good, in gratitude for this expression, in gratitude for the yes, I release this word into what we call the law, that process that knows how to move it into form and expression in our lives in beautiful, perfect ways. Transformation doesn't have to be struggle, pain, and suffering. It does have to be the courage to walk through the old into the new. And so I'm grateful and know that each of us says yes and that it unfolds this way for each of us. So it does. And so it is. Blessings. Thank you.
Hi, we talked about how you react to things and how your mindset is like a big like thing that you do on your actions. So you always want to have a positive mindset because then it might turn out positive. But if you have a negative mindset, you just shut down that positive outcome that you can actually have.